Again, I trained through that, but I couldn't quite train maybe at the highest capacity. So it just took time and diligence. And now I'm definitely an avid believer in the strength work that has helped me a lot.
Disruns Radio, episode 539 starts in 3, 2. Welcome back to Diz Runs Radio, where I talk with runners from all corners of the running world about running, life, and everything in between. I'm your host, Denny Cray. It's just about time to head out the door for an easy run and a great conversation. So if you're ready, then I'm ready. Let's get started. Hey guys, before we get started today, just want to let you know that today we're taking a little trip down memory lane. This is an interview that aired over 300 episodes ago. So for a lot of you, this will probably be a new interview, a new conversation, a new thing to listen to, first time that you're hearing it. And for some of you that have gone back through the archives, or for the handful of you that have been listening and subscribed since day one, this is something that you've heard before, but have probably forgotten, since we're looking at a couple of years ago as when this episode aired originally, in episode 231, and here we are in episode 539. So it's been a minute, but it's with a chat with Emily Harrison, who's an elite level ultra marathoner. And something that I definitely think you're going to enjoy, having a fun little trip down memory lane. And certainly some things that we talked about that I've been talking about, so it might sound kind of familiar. Some good tips, tricks, things to utilize in your training going forward. So enjoy this little blast from the past today. We'll be back to normal schedule with new, fresh interviews, just in the next episode. But due to some cancellations and some schedule issues, we had to fill in a little gap today with a best of, and this is a good one, and one that hasn't aired as a best of before. So I figured why not drag it out of the archives now and let you listen to it. Please forgive me for being still in my monotonous and a bit more boring state. Hopefully you'll agree that I've improved a bit on my end of the conversation these days. But get past me, enjoy what Emily has to say, because it's some good stuff. And that's it for today. So here we go, trip down memory lane from episode 231 with Ms. Emily Harrison. Hey guys, one of the things I love about this show is the opportunity that I have to chat up some of the best runners in the world and try to learn something from them that can help me become the best runner that I can be. My guest today definitely qualifies as one of the best runners in the ultra world. She has almost too many podium finishes to list in just a short time, but a couple that really stand out came in 2014 when she was both the US and world 50K road champion. She is currently a member of the Nike Trail team and also a coach for the McMillan Running Academy, and I'm excited to be able to chat with Emily Harrison today. So Emily, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thanks, Denny, for having me on the show.
Absolutely, absolutely. And guys, if you want to check out what Emily's got going on, you can find her at emilyandb.blogspot.com. On the Twitter, her handle is at GloriaB, and on Instagram, you can find her at emilyharrison0708. And I'll have all of those links, just like always, in the show notes, so you can find them very easily by just going to disruns.com/231 for this episode. So, Emily, the way we get things started on the show is to ask what, for some people, is a pretty straightforward question. Some people, it's a little bit difficult to answer, but I just throw it out there, and it lets us have a place to start from, and that's just to ask, what is your favorite distance to race and why?
Yeah, I think that's more of a loaded question for me, not for the simple answer. I think it depends also when you ask me in my running career what my favorite distance was, my answer would change. Mm-hmm. So, I started running in middle school and kept progressing, and my distances kept getting longer. But I always tended to like the longer distances no matter what I was doing. I'd have to say right now that 50-mile trail is one of my favorite distances. I still don't feel like I've done too many of them, but I've had some decent ones. They were still pretty rough at the end, but I think that's a fun distance. So I'd say that's my favorite distance right now in terms of ultra running.
So. Gotcha. There's everybody that listens to the show knows where I stand on ultra marathoning, which is that I'm in awe, and I have no desire to go past 26.2 miles.
Yeah.
I mean, you mentioned that you started back in middle school and always kind of preferred the longer distances. When did you know that running long distances like was more than just I enjoy the longer races, but like I'm really good at this?
I think pretty early on, it always just seemed to be the case that longer was better. I had some fair performances in the shorter stuff as well, but middle school it was the 2 mile. Like starting after that, getting into high school it was a 2 mile distance. I just seemed to have a sweet spot there. Always seemed to perform best there. The mile was great, but not my strongest event. Same thing with when I do with like a 4x8 or a 4x4. Certainly the 4x4 was a challenge. That was never easy by any means. So, a lot of people at that point in time wanted to go shorter because they're like, we like the short stuff. And I was always opposite of that. I didn't really prefer to do the short stuff. It just hurt worse, I guess. I'm not really sure. It just wasn't fun for me. So, I think you combine the fact that I enjoyed the longer stuff plus the fact I just had more success in those distances as I went through high school. And then in college, when I started doing the 10K, I never really had a great 10K performance. I don't think that reached my potential. However, it was still seen as kind of my event. So, again, the longer distance there, and then you get into professional running and you start playing with the marathon distance and then bust out a good marathon performance in that. So it's just always kind of been that trend. I'd say with the ultra world, though, however, I mean, at this point in time, I wouldn't say 100 mile is my sweet spot. So I'm kind of treading that middle line between the 50K and the 50 mile. I really enjoy those distances and still trying to figure out the 100 mile distance. So we'll see if that longer is better holds true there ultimately.
Gotcha. Going, kind of glossing over a couple of things. I mean, you had some very good marathons. You were, kind of on the, I believe it was 2012, if I get my facts straight, that you were kind of right there as far as possibly having a shot at the Olympics and whatnot, going into the trials at least. When did ultra running get on your radar? Was it at that point, were you already kind of thinking about going even longer than a marathon, or were you still kind of focused on the marathon at that point?
No, at that point, I wasn't focused on the ultra marathon. I was starting to see what that world was about. So here in Flagstaff, we have several ultra runners and trail runners in town. So I was starting to do some more runs with those guys and starting to see more of that world. My mom had done some ultras when I was in high school and early college. So I knew it existed, but I was still very naive to what went on there. I mean, I just know she'd go off onto the trails on the weekends and spend hours out there. And then she had done JFK 50 mile. And that, again, to me at the time was just like, I didn't even have a good comprehension of what that entailed and just thought it was crazy. So I kind of revisited that. I think in 2011, 2012, I kind of started seeing more of these distances popping up again around me. And it kind of sparked my interest of maybe I would want to try that at some point in time. But I had no idea that it would be as soon as the end of 2012 that I would do my first ultra. So before that, going into the trials, marathon was my focus. I was on a professional development team here in Flagstaff. And I was working under Greg McMillan on McMillan Elite. And that was the focus at the time was, getting on that team for 2012. So then things just kind of shifted that summer. I don't know exactly what it was, but my mind started to go towards the ultra distance. And I was like, you know what? I want to give it a shot. So,
Well, I guess it was a fortuitous decision to give it a
yeah,
shot, huh?
I think so.
So what was wh For at that level, I mean, it's a level that I can't comprehend. I've talked to several folks that are, in and around the Olympic scene and the marathon and some really great ultra runners as well. And I just I'm always kind of I can never, it's just something I can't grasp, obviously. What's the transition like from right there, elite road marathon or road racer to going into the ultra world and getting into the trails? Was it easy? Was it difficult? What is that kind of transition at that level like?
It was a little bit of both, I'd say. I still don't think I've quite had like that perfect ultra race on any distance, 50K to 100 miles. So I think I'm still trying to figure out some things to have that come together really well. Like I'd say, I mean, my PR in the marathon, that race went well. It was obviously hard at the end, but it was a good day. Everything came together. I still haven't really quite hit that in the ultra world. I think the first ultra was a somewhat smooth transition in terms of training. Ian Torrance put together my training for me, and it was very manageable. It was a smart plan. It got me very prepared. But then there's still that unknown of going into a 50-mile distance. You're basically doubling what I've done before, and it was still kind of – it was very scary. You know, you just don't know what's going to happen. So in terms of my preparation, I was very prepared. I think that part went really well. But the nutrition was trickier for me as I went longer. I didn't take in enough calories. And so that's something I still struggle with, is my nutrition during and not hitting that bonk between, you know, obviously I'm trying to push hard still and trying to tread that red line, even though it's, you know, 50K, 50 mile, whatever it may be. I'm still trying to run hard, but you need more calories than I do in a marathon, I think, to sustain that. So in that respect, it's still a bumpy transition for me.
Gotcha. So. Is that a struggle mentally to take in as many calories and to know that you need to fuel much more than in a marathon, or is that the struggle? What is the, do you have any idea what the struggle is with figuring that balance out?
Part of it is that, you know, having that discipline and the mental part, like, oh gosh, I gotta eat more even if my stomach doesn't feel very good. I think, honestly, that's also been a big struggle for me going into ultras, is, you know, the nutrition. I've had a lot of just general, like, kind of food sensitivity things with my body. I just tanked for a while. It's kind of been off and on since college. I've been dealing with that. So figuring out my food sensitivities, I found out that I have a corn, I react to corn. So, you know, corn is the base for pretty much every nutrition product on the market. So that's been kind of fun this past year or two the past year is when I figured that out, is trying to figure out what I can fuel with. And it also kind of explains maybe why I was having so many stomach problems during my ultras and long runs, you know, just not feeling good. And then that just led to fatigue day in, day out during training. And that got really frustrating mentally, because, again, I'm trying to perform well. I'm new to the ultra scene, and then things kind of start tanking. And I knew I wasn't overtraining, because I've never really pushed that threshold of mileage and just overdoing it. So I knew it wasn't necessarily like an overtraining in terms of that. So that's been hard. So, I mean, it's kind of a couple different things mixed in there with the nutrition. So it's complicated, I guess, but.
Well, and not only is it complicated on the figuring out, you know, for anybody, you know, for people that don't have sensitivities for things, but then there's just the daily body chemistry that, you know, what you do today, may or may not agree with you tomorrow. And so then you add the race and the exertion and all that kind of stuff on top of it. And it's definitely more, at least from my perspective, more art than it is science sometimes.
Right. Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think the nutrition in general is a huge thing. I always admire some of the other elites who say that they have never really had too much trouble with their nutrition throughout a race specifically, because it's like, wow, that's amazing. I want that, you know. Or like, I know like one guy, you know, Max King for the 100K World Championships, he was like, told his handler, you know, he's like, oh yeah, my nutrition plan is super easy. I want a gel every 5K loop. I was like, man, I wish I could do that.
I can't handle gels at all. So
I know, right? It's like, oh,
but from a simplicity level, obviously that would be, I mean, right. Wow, that would be ideal.
Yeah, seriously.
So what kind of things have you found that work for you?
Right now I've been playing around with the Honey Stinger products, mainly the chews and the gels. So I do that. I really like Coke during my races too. Later in the race, that seems to give me a good kick. I go with the Mexican Coke, so it's with the pure cane sugar. I don't really drink it much, obviously, day to day, but late in a race, I even use it in the Olympic Trials Marathon here the other weekend. Late in the race, it's just kind of nice to have that sugar kick and the caffeine in there. Mm-hmm. So, and it usually sits pretty well on my stomach.
Gotcha. So. Well, and you know, it's one of those things where I think that, at least for me, I agree that, you know, even things that you don't have on a regular basis, sometimes when you're, you know, late in a race and you just need a little extra pick me up, a little sugar, a little caffeine, maybe if it sits all right, go for it.
Yeah, exactly.
So you mentioned the Olympic trials. How was that race for you?
Yeah, it was really hot.
It's hot, yep.
Yeah, I didn't run what I necessarily wanted to, but I was really happy to get across that finish line and not be in a medical tent, not be super tanked after the race. Recovery's gone well. So, again, yeah, it was a little different approach this year just because I have not been focusing on the marathon. Mm-hmm. So compared to the 2012 trials, that was a different approach. But to be honest, we had done like a 9-week training cycle, so it was really short, but it went really well, and that was really encouraging for me going into this year just because, like I said, the past year or two haven't been super ideal in terms of being able to train to kind of where I feel like I should be able to train and race. So that was really encouraging for me to start getting back to hitting workout times closer to where I should be.
Gotcha. So for that race, do you go into it as more of it's just, I don't want to say just to work out because it's the Olympic trials, but is that kind of the mentality of it's a workout? It's maybe a little bit more serious than just the standard workout for the plan, but is that kind of the mental outlook that you go into it with?
Yeah, I mean, I went into it wanting to race and wanting to compete well, but I certainly adjusted my time expectations. My coach was going into it, I wanted to try to go for maybe a sub 240. And then we saw the temperatures and he was like, I think we need to adjust that. So I started out more conservative, which was good ultimately. But then it just kind of wasn't coming together for me. 10 miles into the race, it just still wasn't right where it just wasn't quite clicking. Mm-hmm. So then I just kind of found myself slipping off the pace and running more comfortable. So, right. You know, I kind of let it go and, you know, yeah, I mean, it wasn't like a horrible day out there, but it wasn't a great day either. But so, like I said, expectations were a little higher going into it.
Right.
However, it ended a little bit differently, which is okay.
What was the atmosphere like for running it? I mean, you can even compare and contrast the last two Olympic trials or just, you know, what's it like to run in a race like that?
Yeah, it's there's a lot of energy, you know, it's it's pretty cool because we had several runners from Flagstaff who were there and were strong contenders in the top 10. So it's really cool to be around those people a little bit. And this time to not have as much pressure on myself was actually a little bit more enjoyable. You know, obviously there was a part of me that wanted to be in that position again. I can't deny that. That's for sure. You know, I want to be coming in with that 232 time again and be talked about. But in some ways, though, like I said, it was awesome to be there and kind of be in all of the other Flagstaff runners who are in that position now, and the energy surrounding them was really cool. One of the coaches from here, he coaches that elite team now, NAZ Elite, and they were just, you know, they were all calm, cool, collected, and the coach is freaking out. He's really nervous. He's not sleeping, and so it's just kind of fun to be around that dynamic and see how everyone reacts to the pressure and the expectations that are upon them. So, and especially those top people, I mean, they're in front of the media quite a bit that weekend. So it's not like they can just hole up and right. rest and, you know, they really have to manage themselves well to be able to perform on the day. So, and it's always awesome when you're out there on the course and you look across and there go the top women coming back down towards you. Just even watching in person how they handle themselves and during the race, and you can tell they're working, they're very focused, determined. So that's always really cool.
What are the comparisons or the differences of a race like that, an elite road race versus an elite ultra type of trail race type of event?
Yeah, I think it depends on which event. You know, Western States is obviously going to be a different ball game than maybe like a Lake Sonoma, which also draws a lot of elite runners. So I think it's more uptight on the road circuit, if you will, in some of these big races. Things are very dialed in. You know, we have elite bottles during the marathon. Mm-hmm. So you have to make sure you submit your bottles before a certain time on a certain day so they can set those out for you. They're usually set up by position, so you know ahead of time what table, what position your bottle's going to be in. So that's the logistics are very dialed in with that kind of thing. But on the other hand, you know, for an ultra, you may have drop bags that you need to put together. So the advanced planning is always there for both races, it seems like. But I think what's cool during the ultras is that you have more opportunity to have a crew, which is fun to me. So, you know, even as an elite, you have a crew person who's handing you your bottle and getting you what you need and really helping you. It's more personal, I guess is a good way to put it. So, and you tend to know, I mean, both races, you tend to know your competitors, but I think even it's even more intimate in the ultra world. At the elite race, usually you're on the start line and you're like, oh, hey, how are you doing? How's life been? You know, and then the gun goes off and you're racing each other. So those are some key differences.
Right. In an elite ultra, you know, like you said, you're kind of staying high a little bit at the start and whatnot. When does the race turn on? When does the race really get serious? You know, I've heard and I've said, and I feel like it's kind of, you know, kind of maybe a tongue in cheek thing for marathons, for road racing, you know, that the first 20 miles is kind of the warm up and then the race starts the last 10K. How does that translate into the trail scene?
I think it really depends on the course, and some people go pretty hard from the start, and sometimes that works out well, sometimes it doesn't. So it's kind of like the marathon, the same thing. You have some racers who are more aggressive, and for them the race starts much earlier in their heads. But you know, I'd say definitely kind of that same time frame, you know, the last third, you really want to start amping things up and really dialed in. And if you're in a good place, that's when you can start making some moves and making some decisions, if you want to go for it or not. So yeah, I think it just depends on the event, some too.
Gotcha. What, you know, see, and obviously, you know, that's one of the big differences of trail racing versus road racing is that, you know, all of the different terrains and different, you know, everything that you deal with from one race to the next, even though the distance might be the same, there's a lot of other variables at play. What are some of the race, you know, whether it's specific races or just generalized, you know, more of like the terrains and the course layouts that seem to work well for you?
I tend to like courses that are more runnable. So things that are, for me, it's more about the technicality of the course. So I'm okay with climbing. I'm still working on my descending strengths. I'm not as great of a downhill runner as I would like to be and probably should be. So that's something kind of need to keep working on. But typically for me, if there's some hills, I like climbing. So uphills are good for me. And again, on terrain, it's more runnable. So smoother single track is nice for me because I consider myself a rhythm runner. So anytime I can lock into a rhythm and just go with a flow is better for me. I'm not always great about changing gears and don't kind of have that style of running in me. So again, I'm something I'm working on, trying to get more comfortable on some more technical trails as well. So I'm doing Massanutten Mountain 100 Mile in May, and that's on the East Coast in Virginia, and that's pretty rocky. So I better get somewhat comfortable on that stuff.
Well, and it's 100 miles, so that's a ball of wax to be contended with as well.
Exactly, yeah. I've always had it in my head that I wanted to do that one, and then I just, for some reason, this year, hit the button for the lottery. I'm not sure why I did that so soon. Again, that was one of those things. I was like, oh, maybe in a couple years I'll go for that one, but just want to get more experience with that distance. And yeah, that course is in my backyard where I grew up, and my parents live right there, so there's just a lot of nostalgia with that one. Yeah. But anyway,
I'm not sure exactly how I want to say this, but like over the course of these long races, especially when they're kind of, you know, some type of a looped type of course, does the course change throughout the race, maybe from fatigue or just from traffic, or how does that? And is that something you can prepare for, or you just kind of have to go with the flow?
Yeah, sure. You know, I think a good example of a loop course, so Bootlegger 50K out in Boulder City, Nevada, it's a two loop course. So, and to me, that course changes significantly from loop one to loop two. And you see it in a lot of people's splits too. So it obviously changes for a lot of people. Mm-hmm. The first loop doesn't feel too terrible. It has some climbing in there, and then the second loop, those hills get bigger. You know, all of a sudden you're like, oh, I don't remember that hurting so bad. So It does. It can change. And then some courses, yeah, the traffic can definitely change, especially, you know, out and back courses. Mm-hmm. So Lake Sonoma, when I did that, it goes out, does like a lollipop, and then comes back on itself. So obviously, if you're in the towards the front of the race, going out, you really don't have much traffic to deal mm-hmm. with. You know, other than your fellow competitors. So, but then by the time you go out and do the loop and then come back, you start hitting the other runners who are still on their way out. And so that certainly adds another element. And then you consider too that you're probably more fatigued at that point. So then you start adding in the extra, you know, element of, you know, making sure you're not running into other people can certainly impact things. But, you know, most of the time, again, people are really considerate and they try to move out of your way, right, which is awesome. But
yeah, yeah. I mean, I guess that could be an interesting situation. I can't imagine a situation where somebody would do that, but if somebody's just like, no, like, screw it, I'm running my race, like, way back
right
here. Like, you
yeah,
go around
I know.
Me.
It's kind of one of those things where, yeah, I would kind of understand that in some ways, but at some point you're also like, man, that person didn't move. How rude was that? And it's like, well, I could have moved too, you know? So
right,
it's
right
both way, like what makes my race more important than their race. So,
well, right. I guess it's just kind of one, for me, at least it would be like, man, if somebody's challenging for, you know, the lead for the podium, like,
yeah.
I mean, I'm out here, you know, taking my sweet time. Like it's not going to cost me 2 seconds, like whatever, 2 seconds isn't a big deal for me, but at the other end of the spectrum, it's can make a big difference.
Right. I mean, we had the same thing at the Olympic trials the other weekend too. It was the lead men, and they forewarned us, you know, like it was a loop course, so the lead men at some point in time are probably going to come up on you and pass you, and we're going to ask that, you know, those women move off to the side of the road. I mean, we're still running, but, you know, clear the main path. And that's exactly what happened. Was they had lead bikes come up and they're like, you know, can you move over to the right? It's like lead men are coming. So it's like you get over to the other side of the course and then you let all the lead vehicles go through and the lead men. So yeah, even we have it too, I suppose.
Yeah, definitely. So. What's the, just to go back to that, you mentioned the vehicles. I didn't even think about that before, but how does that change? Does that impact the race with having all the extra traffic besides just the runners, but all the media coverage at the front of a race like the trials?
Right. Yeah. It wasn't too bad. Until they came by you, you know,
right,
and you're like, oh, there's a huge, it's like the president's coming through, you know, got to move. They had, like I said, they had lead bicycles and they had a lead vehicle or two with the media on it. So and it didn't take them too long to go by, but
right,
it's like, at what point then do you kind of merge back into the other men who are still coming by you? So that was, I wasn't sure, you know, it's like, what's my best judgment? I want to get in their way still, but you know, I obviously don't want to be running way outside my way for longer than I have to.
Right, right. So. Yeah, it's, again, you know, it boils down to everybody's running their race and like,
yeah,
you have to run yours, but at the same time, it's a balancing act of what's courteous and what's, you know, where are you screwing yourself, I guess, is what.
Right.
So for you and for, you know, the elites of any type of racing, you know, whether it's the roads, whether it's the trails, whether it's the ultras, you know, what is it that separates the competition at your type of a level? So I have to feel, and maybe I'm wrong, but I have to feel like, you know, for most of the, certainly the bigger races that you run, you know, there's anywhere of 10, 15 women that have a legitimate chance to win on any particular day. What is it that kind of helps to separate is it the course, is it just the day, how does that tend to shake itself out?
Right. Yeah, I think of course everyone's going to be hopefully prepared, but you know, some people are more prepared than others, so I think that factors in. Certainly some courses are going to play to some runner's strengths compared to others, so more so I'd say on the trails, but that can be true in a road marathon as well, for sure. But ultimately, it really, to me, I think is a mental component. So they, you know, those top women and men, they have the mentality that they belong there and that they're there to do a job and they're going to get it done. And I think that really shows at the end of the day. For me personally, I think I've seen that in my own racing. You know, some days where I did not perform where I wanted to perform, I can usually look and see that, yes, there may have been some physical stuff, but A, I didn't handle that mentally very well, especially in the ultras. It's non-usual. It's a long race. You know, more often than not, something is probably going to go wrong. Right. I mean, even in the marathon, it's not going to be perfect the whole way. So I think the biggest thing that separates those top runners is how they handle that. If you start shutting down and you start getting negative on yourself and focusing on the wrong things, more often than not, they ruin their race. So a lot of times those top runners, they just, they handle themselves well and they embrace that challenge and they embrace that pain or discomfort or whatever it may be, and they can rally. So I think that's the, like I said, the mental component is huge.
How do you, you specifically, how do you work on improving and training the mental component leading up to a race?
Yeah, for me, I do gain a lot of confidence from my training. So if my training has gone well, or if I've had some good workouts, or just knowing that I've put in quality work, that helps me a lot mentally going into races. I've certainly lined up underprepared, and that tends to mess with my mind a little bit. So if I can get in good training, that gives me a lot of confidence. However, you know, there have been those days where I can't line up too confident because, right, you know, if you think it's going to be easy, that's when I finally get in trouble too. Like, oh, this won't be so bad to run this time. I'm ready to do that. However, you still forget that it's going to be hard and you have to work for it. So I think you have to be careful with how confident you are too.
What does your training look like leading up to, say, a 50 miler as far as volume goes? And like what do you, you know, how much of a long run do you do leading up to a race? What's that look like at you know, for somebody that's doing it for a living as opposed to somebody who's doing it, you know, for the passion on the weekend?
Yeah. Lately my volume has been lower, and my long runs haven't really been as high either. However, in the ideal world, like when I'm really in a good spot with my training, you know, I do well in the 80s to 90s range for my weekly mileage. I can kind of tap into the triple digits here and there, but I don't think I do very well sustaining that for weeks on end. So I guess I can touch on that. But if I can average in the 80s, maybe low 90s, I seem to respond really well to that amount of volume. And then it depends on how that's structured. That usually includes some double runs, but not necessarily a lot. Again, it varies depending on what I'm training for. Long runs, you know, my first ultra that I did really well, I would kind of do like the standard marathon long run on the weekend and then just come back though and do some back to backs. So maybe like even just a 90 minute run on Sunday, or, you know, 90 minutes to 2 hours. I seem to respond well to that. So again, nothing too crazy for me personally. I mean, there are some other elites out there who certainly push that envelope much more than I do, but that seems to work well for me and keeps me healthy as well, which I think is huge, because consistency in my mind is more important than being able to hit a training cycle hard and then being injured or burnt out. So I think because I have been able to continue running year to year without many injuries over my running career in general and not having to take a ton of time off, I think that has helped a lot in terms of just building up that stamina and endurance.
Yeah, I would tend to agree with that. You know, I mean, a sport like running or any endurance activity, I mean, you can hit it hard, but you're not going to build that it doesn't get built overnight. Like, you got to have that patience and that consistency, and certainly staying injury free helps that. And I he mentioned a couple of small injuries. I can't pass that by without asking. I'm a athletic trainer by trade, so I'm into the sports injuries and you know, I mean, that's just that lights me up. That's what I love. I love working with injured runners and helping them get back to running, you know, pain free and whatnot. So, can we, you know, what does your injury history look like?
Let's see. I didn't really have any injuries throughout high school or anything. I had kind of a hip issue, but it never stopped me from running. And that, I think, was ultimately an imbalance, as many of us have.
Right.
So, but again, that never really stopped me in my tracks per se. College, I had a couple more injuries. I did have one stress reaction in the shin, and then I had another one from falling on my knee. Actually, that knocked me out for a few weeks, but that was from a fall and not necessarily an overuse injury. So that was really frustrating. And I was like, right. I can't believe I knocked myself out because I fell, but it happens. I'm clumsy.
clumsy so and the trails don't work well together.
Yeah, right. Yeah, that was actually on a sidewalk of all things, so that was probably way worse.
I've had, I think, 3 or 4 falls on sidewalk/road, so I don't know that I'd label myself clumsy, but I mean, I guess my record speaks for itself.
Yeah. Well, if you extrapolate it out over time, it's probably not that bad of a ratio, right. So it's going to happen. But yeah, and then, you know, I think I had another stress reaction after college that was kind of hard to tell what that was. Mm-hmm. Again, the shin. But that was about the time my body was really, really rebelling on me and everything was just breaking down. Mm-hmm. So I didn't really have any major injuries after that. I had a high hamstring issue. Again, I was able to keep running through that, but I really hit the strength work and the physical therapy hard and finally found someone here in Flagstaff who really helped me get over that. And that was a long-term thing to deal with. Definitely a pain in the rear, literally and figuratively.
Right.
So again, I trained through that, but I couldn't quite train maybe at the high capacity. So it just took time and diligence. And now I'm definitely an avid believer in the strength work that has helped me a lot. I think especially as I've gotten older, you know, only 30, but I have been running a long time. Mm-hmm. So just all that usage catches up to you. So the strength work has been great. Started adding that in beginning of last year, and I think that's key.
Yeah, I certainly agree. And people that listen regularly might get sick of me harping on that kind of stuff. But I'd love to hear it from your mouth. I love hearing it from your mouth that it's important. I fully agree and believe in the value of you know, just shoring up the weak areas that develop mm-hmm. over time. So maybe if you wouldn't mind, just a couple of suggestions, which are probably the same that I've been given, but again, to hear it from a different voice, what are a couple of good ideas for just simple things? Because, you know, for the regular runner or the quote unquote average runner that, you know, has work and has family obligations and things like that, like time is of the essence. And you know, it's like, do I want to sacrifice my running to get a strength training and focus on that and whatnot? So are there a couple of things that seem to be good go-to things that you do that maybe, you know, just exercises or routines or things like that you could share?
Yeah. You know, I ultimately, like, just backing up a little bit, I think a lot of injuries, you know, your foot may be injured or you may be having a hamstring issue, but more often than not, it really seems like it's stemming from a sleepy glute or weak mm-hmm. glutes. Something's not firing. So I think anytime you can target your glutes and then the core is huge. So, you know, clamshells are really easy to add in and they don't take very long and they're easy to challenge because you can add a resistance band. So as you get stronger, you can, mm-hmm. you can challenge that more. I think that's a good one to do at home, really targeting that hip girdle area. I've been a fan of the single leg Romanian deadlifts lately. Mm-hmm. So the RDLs, they are awesome. So that kind of, I think, is really what got my hip strong and firing again, like it should be, to help that high hamstring. So again, that's something easy you can do at home. And if you need to add weight, you can get, you know, kettlebell pretty easily and just add a little weight to that. So
yeah, and I think that the key of something that you said there that really jumps out is that, you know, I mean, stuff you can do at home. So like you can do it while you're watching TV or while you're waiting for the you know, something to cook on the stove. Or I mean, like you can mix these things in and they don't have to take a big amount of time, which is something that, I mean, it's easy to overlook. It's easy to think like, oh man, I got to go to the gym and I got to, you know, spend 30 minutes and this and that. But you really don't if you just mix things in when you have a spare couple of minutes here and there.
Right. And like you said, I mean, especially for a lot of the athletes I work with personally, it's time is of the essence. So mm-hmm. yes, in the ideal world, we would all be professional athletes and, you know, we have that time to do a really, you know, significant strength session twice a week in mm-hmm. that 30 minutes. And then plus paying for PT or chiropractic massage, whatever it may be, your grass and work. It's all ideal, but we all have, or, you know, most people I work with, they have family, jobs, plus they're trying to run and, you know, hit their running goals. So we just really have to be careful with overdoing it in general. I mean, we only have so much energy to commit to each day. So it's like you said, picking and choosing and really maximizing, I think, especially a runner's individual weakness is huge. So it's good to kind of maybe get evaluated and have someone who knows running help you identify maybe what your weak area is. So then you can really target that specifically in those few minutes you have from time to time.
Yeah, so. Definitely. And a lot of times, you know, like you mentioned as well, I mean, it's one little weakness or one little weak area that leads to so many other problems. And it's not always the same problem. It could be a foot, it could be a knee, it could be a hip. Yeah. And it's all stemming from the same one thing that you keep dealing with. So if you can solve that problem, it'll really, 9 times out of 10, it'll make a huge difference.
Right.
So as we're kind of getting close to wrapping things up today, Emily, I one of the things I always love to ask, just because it's something that, you know, I don't have any big plans on my running schedule right now. So I always love to ask what other people's plans are, what things do you have coming up? What's the future look like for you? Maybe I can get some ideas of things that I can add to my list before long, although I'm not going to be running the same events you are probably, but it's still, what's the future look like for you?
We'll be doing Lake Sonoma 50 Mile in April. So that usually draws a lot of elite runners. So that should be competitive. And I've been there before, so I know the course now. And then after that will be Massanutten Mountain 100 Mile in May.
Okay. And is that about as far out? I know you had already kind of mentioned those as well, but is that kind of as far out as the plan is right now?
Yeah, I've looked at some other ones for the rest of the year, been toying around with the plan, but I'm not entirely sure. Haven't made any commitments yet. I usually do JFK 50 Mile in November, so that will probably stay on the schedule. So, but we're going to be camp hosting in Steamboat Springs up in Colorado for 3 months this summer. So that will probably impact a little bit where I race for the summer months.
Gotcha. So one last thing is, as we're kind of wrapping things up here, Emily, with the schedule, you know, kind of, like you said, a couple things in the spring, maybe something in the fall. How many races do you typically go with? Is it a matter of, you know, run a couple of races, but really race a couple of them hard, or how, you know, what's quote unquote rule of thumb? What's the schedule kind of thing typically look like?
Yeah, I think I personally tend to race a little less than some other runners might. It comes down to, again, a recovery mm-hmm. issue for me. I need time to recover, and I like to be recovered. And also the preparation. I like a good chunk of time to prepare adequately for a big race. So yeah, typically, I mean, I might do to maybe 2 or 3 ultras a year where I'll hit it hard. So those are big goal races where I'll really go after it. We'll see this year if I challenge that a little bit, like last year I did add-ins. I did a lot of shorter racing over the summer, and they weren't necessarily all A races. They're more local races, right. Trail stuff. So I could do more of those, and I did those more frequently. So maybe like once a month or so I could throw in a shorter race. But in terms of the big goal races where I'm really going after it, if it's an ultra event, I like to stick in that like 2 to 3 range. Seems to work well lately for me, but we'll see as I get more, as my body adjusts to the demands of the ultra training and racing, where I go from there. Maybe I can do a little bit more, but I'll probably always still be more conservative with that.
Well, and I mean, I think that's a great place to kind of wrap things up, because it fully encapsulates things that we've already talked about, where, you know, like the consistency and not pushing yourself to where you break down and are forced to take time off and then build back up, and the mental game of being feeling like you're well prepared, so that, you know, if that's one of the things that makes the difference between first and fifth, you know, knowing that you're well prepared and mentally strong and ready to go, I mean, that's worth, you know, running 1 or 2 less races a year, so that, you know, you can have that confidence going into it.
Right.
So guys, again, EmilyandB.blogspot.com. We didn't even talk about you running with your dog. That's one of
we didn't.
One of the things that I absolutely love to do. I'm a staunch believer that dogs make some of the best running partners in the world. But that's
definitely
that's where the B comes from, for anybody that's wondering.
Yes. So
EmilyandB.blogspot.com is the website. Gloria B on Twitter and at EmilyHarrison0708 on the Instagram. Again, links at DizRuns.com/231. Emily, thanks for taking the time. People don't know, but we've been trying to line this up for quite a while. And it, finally, the schedule's worked out, which is great. I'm glad we were able to chat and connect. And I just appreciate your time. And obviously, all the best going forward in 2016 and beyond.
Thank you so much.
All right, guys. Thank you so much for taking the time to listen to today's episode of the show. Hope that you enjoyed this one, especially if this was your first time listening to this episode, or maybe if you've been around for a minute and you heard this one before. Hope that you made it through and enjoyed kind of re-listening to the conversation with Emily today, and maybe getting something new out of it, or being reminded of what you got out of it the first time. But, and again, obviously, if this is your first time listening to it, hope that you took something away from this episode. I certainly did. And as I said when I did the kind of wrap up the first time, there were a lot of things from this episode that I felt like I could take, that I could glean, that I could learn from. And it didn't disappoint coming through it again this time as making it a best of episode a couple of years later. And really what stood out to me, I think, the most this time is something that Emily was talking about when it comes to building for her races and her training, and not going all out for every race, but building up and trying to get better, you know, not month after month, but year after year. And that may mean that you don't do absolutely everything possible to maximize your performance on the day of this one race. And I think that that's something that we really struggle with. Like, we have a goal race. This is my A race. I want to leave no stone unturned. I want to do everything I can to have a great performance. And that's great. And that's admirable. And I hope that you're successful, but don't sacrifice the next race to try to push and go all in for this race. Okay. You're better off to be at 87% for your goal race, and then to be able to build from that so that you're even higher and even more prepared and more fit and more trained for your next race, than to try to be at 99%, 100% for this race, but be teetering right on that edge of breaking down. You push through, you grind out the race, and then you deal with some injury that sidelines you for a month, 2 months, 6 months. And now when you're starting to train for the next race, you're starting way, way, way down. I know that sometimes that can make logical sense, but when we're in it, when we're getting ready for that big race, whether it's the PR attempt, the Boston qualifier attempt, the Olympic trials qualifier attempt, whatever it might be, whatever level of running that you're in, it's easy to say, you know what? Yeah, I want to be good next year, but damn, I really want to have a great race in this race. And I'm going to do an extra, you know, speed session or skip a rest day to get an extra training day, thinking that that's going to help you. And in the long run, in the short run, that might help you, but in the long run, you're playing with fire. And, you know, hearing this, re-listening to this conversation with Emily, it reminded me that she's really built her career, and it's a good career, on doing everything she can within reason and not overextending herself, so that she's able to continue to build for the next race and the next race and the next race. And for those of us that don't have a career in running, in that we don't get paid for our race performance, we're not keeping the food on the table and the roof over our head because we finished, you know, second instead of 12th at the recent race, it's even more important. We do this for fun. We do this to push ourselves to get a sense of competition, to have fun, to whatever reason you do this for, whatever reason that you run. Don't sacrifice it for one day's performance. Don't push yourself to the limit to try to perform well on one day, because it could cost you the next day. It could cost you the next week. It could cost you the next month. And that's not going to be a good situation. So that was my takeaway from this trip down memory lane. And that was kind of one of the real big reasons that I wanted to rerun this episode. Probably should have aired this as a best of a while back, but there's so many great episodes in the archives that, you know, when I only try to do a handful of best ofs a year, it's hard to pick and choose. But this one was one that really stood out to me, and I really wanted to revisit, and I hope you enjoyed it. And if this is your first time, I hope you, maybe this will encourage you to take a little trip down memory lane more often on your own and check out some of the past episodes, although you'll have to get past me being a little bit more monotonous than hopefully I am now. Hopefully things are better on my end, like I said at the beginning. But anyway, I'll go ahead and stop rambling on this one. Thanks for listening, guys. Thanks for taking a little trip down memory lane with me. And like I said, we'll be back to normal. We've got a fresh episode coming up in the next episode, and then a quick tip, and we'll be right back on the normal schedule. Although there may be, just as you're listening to this, as it comes out here at the beginning of March, there may be a few more best ofs in the next month or so, as kind of putting some effort and energy towards pushing out the book, because the book is finally almost here. It'll be official, live, released, for sale the end of the month. So if you want more information on that, BeReadyOnRaceDay.com is the website. But enough of me talking. Let's put a bow on this thing. Thank you guys for listening. Hope you enjoyed this one. Have a great rest of your day, and look forward to talking to you again soon. But until then, please be well, take good care, and we'll talk later. See you guys.